Item number three.
A presentation by Community Advocates Public Policy Institute regarding their report, The Impact of the Affordable Care Act on Milwaukee County's Behavioral Health Division.
Okay, good morning. Can you please introduce yourself for the committee?
Good morning. My name is Rob Cherry. I'm the director of the Public Policy Institute, Community Advocates.
And good morning. I'm Mike Baer, research and program coordinator for the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute.
Okay. Briefly, before you get started, can you tell us how this study was paid for? Kind of how it came into fruition.
Sure.
So it looks like Mr. Volk may have something to add. Come on up.
The expert on that.
All right, he is. He's the money guy. Yeah, he is. Good morning, Mr. Volk. Mr. Volk is the executive director.
Good morning. This was a study that was done by both the Public Policy Forum, which is the report that you had
last month,
and our institute. We were fortunate on our side to have some funding from the Soros Foundation, so we were able to essentially do the report that you're going to see today for free. Mr. Henkin, I believe, was compensated for about $16,000 for his side. The genesis of it was our saying to Milwaukee County that this ACA train is coming down the road. It obviously has a lot of potential impact for BHD, and we would like to help Milwaukee County think that through.
Okay. One more question. When was this report submitted to the county executive's office?
November of last year.
Okay.
Yeah, we just getting it.
And that was the other question. Do you know why it took so long to get it here? You will confer.
Oh, he moved real quick.
Out of here.
So that's like the hot seat first thing in the morning, right, Director Colon?
Madam Chair, Supervisors, when we got it, we had plans to present it before the committee in January. Unfortunately, the report didn't get to you, so that's what stalled the process a little bit.
Okay, thank you. We just wanted to know because, again, we had initial concerns from people on the committee that we were now hearing a report in April that had to do with material that was compilated in October. So thank you very much for clearing that up. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Okay, well, we appreciate the opportunity to present our findings, and thank you, Madam Chair and Supervisors. The presentation that we've put together on our report has sort of two parts. We'll run briefly through the changes that are happening because of the ACA and then talk about some of our conclusions and recommendations. This is the start of a treasure map that our colleague David Reamer and I have worked on to try to explain the Affordable Care Act and the changes that come with it. We've broken the groups of people, generally of Americans who are uninsured and insured, into those who get their insurance coverage through government programs, which is TRICARE for members of the military, the VA for some veterans, Medicare for seniors and those on SSDI, and Medicaid for people of low incomes. There's also the private side, which we've broken into three markets. Law actually breaks it into three markets: individuals and self-employed, small groups and large groups. And then all of these programs, in some way or another, participate in insured products in the commercial market. And then patients, through this sort of funding mechanism, end up at the providers. And this is at the far right, where BHD fits into the picture. So with the Affordable Care Act, the single biggest change is the number of people who are uninsured dramatically shrinks. We'll show some numbers a little later on exactly how many. And this is due to a number of reasons: the individual mandate, expansion of Medicaid that we'll talk about a little more, children being allowed to stay on their parents' coverage until age 26, and a number of other provisions in the law. There are some folks who are exempt from the law. This is anybody who's incarcerated and get their health insurance through the prison health system, people who are not here lawfully, and those who have a religious objection to health care, health insurance. The state, because of the Supreme Court's decision last summer, has the option to expand or actually contract its Medicaid program. The governor's proposal here in Wisconsin is to draw the line, the eligibility line for adults at 100% of the poverty level. And that would apply to adults with children in Badger Care and adults without children in Badger Care. And we at Community Advocates have advocated for moving that line up to 133%. Either way, whether it's the line is drawn at 100% or 133, there will be a significant increase in the number of patients at BHD who have Medicaid coverage that previously didn't. Our Badger Care Core program in Wisconsin is an ever-shrinking program that's capped and frozen, and that's for childless adults. And there's a waiting list that's over 150,000 people now in the state, and many of those childless adults are the population that BHD is serving. So beginning in 2014, there will be affordable coverage options available for them. Another way that they can get coverage is through the exchanges, which are now being called marketplaces. And this is a part of the Affordable Care Act that's designed to implement and foster competition in the private insurance market. There are also subsidies available for individuals that fall between 100% and 400% of the poverty level that will help folks afford their premiums and afford the cost sharing, the deductibles and co-pays that come with private insurance. So in Milwaukee County, we've estimated an increase of about 4% in the number of folks who have private insurance. The middle bar, the red bar, is those who are in Medicaid and other government programs, but that doesn't include Medicare. So this estimate was also done with the assumption that we would draw our eligibility line for Badger Care at 133%, and if the governor's proposal moves forward to be 100%, that middle bar will be less. We don't have an estimate exactly on how much less it will be, but there will be fewer people, that population between 100% of the poverty level and 133% of the poverty level, that won't fall into that middle bar and will likely be either uninsured or in the private market. So it's also likely that that uninsured bar will be a little bit larger, a little higher, because of the governor's proposal. So not only does who is covered change, what is covered also changes with the Affordable Care Act. And the Essential Health Benefits Package applies to Badger Care and private insurance plans sold in the exchange and outside of the exchange to the individual and small group market. This benefits package is significantly stronger, covers more things than private insurance plans generally do today, including prescription drugs, emergency services, and some preventive services. And the big one for BHD here is the inclusion of mental health and substance use disorder, and the law specifically includes behavioral health treatment. So this will dramatically increase the number of BHD patients who have coverage in their insurance plans or in Medicaid for the treatment that they receive at BHD. There's also major protections, consumer protections created by the ACA. These include, as I mentioned earlier, the coverage for children up to age 26 on parents' plans, a ban on lifetime and annual limits. There's the prohibition on rescinding coverage. If you made a mistake, say, on your application, you checked male and you're a female, they can't take your coverage away from you. There's many new processes for appealing insurance company decisions. So there's a process with the insurance company, a process with the state, federal process, and then ultimately a civil judicial process. There's also a ban on discriminating because of pre-existing conditions. This took effect immediately when the law was passed for children and starts beginning of next year for all adults. So the big question that we looked at here is, how do all of the things in the Affordable Care Act, all 2,000 pages of it, apply to the Behavioral Health Division? And the first major recommendation we have, and we understand there's been some movement towards this, is gathering relevant data that fits into the categories that the Affordable Care Act envisions. And this includes residency status, age, dependent children, custodial parent status, the number of patients who are pregnant, number of patients with disabilities, their family size, their income, their insurance status, and with that insurance status, whether they have coverage for mental health and substance use disorder services. So in order for policymakers and BHD to make good informed decisions, BHD needs to know which of its current patients will continue to have health insurance, which of those will gain health insurance because of the ACA, how many will remain uninsured, how many will obtain coverage that includes the essential health benefits that has that mental health and substance use disorder treatment, and how many will have no insurance finance coverage for the treatment they need at all. We also have some general recommendations, including appointing a person whose job it is to understand the Affordable Care Act and to work on sort of bringing BHD into the Affordable Care Act world, carefully considering, and this goes at a policy level and at the practical level, at the treatment level, of any new programs and growing any current programs and eliminating any current programs should be carefully considered to make sure that that thought fits into the world that the ACA has created. BHD and the county, frankly, should advocate for the Medicaid expansion and for health homes, which is a model for care included in the Affordable Care Act. And that Medicaid expansion is extremely important for folks in Milwaukee who fall into this population below the poverty line and slightly above the poverty line that could be covered with federal dollars coming to the state for their mental health and substance use treatment. The county should also consider creative, innovative partnerships to get around the IMD exclusion, the Institute for Mental Disease exclusion that cuts into the revenues of BHD. BHD should monitor the exchange implementation, which is being done in Wisconsin by the federal government. And there's a lot of concerns among the advocates of what the federal exchange is going to look like, how it's going to operate, where its operations will be, how informed they'll be about Wisconsin's insurance laws, how they interact with insurance companies here in the state. And the county should also consider becoming, whether formally or informally, a navigator, which is somebody who, an entity who helps individuals get into insurance coverage or into Medicaid depending on their income and their eligibility for those programs. The county should also be aware of and responsive to all of the changes that are coming to the covered benefits with the essential health benefits package and explore enhancing the revenue coming into BHD with all of the new federal money available because of the Affordable Care Act, many grants, there's a public health and prevention fund. We think that, you know, many of these jobs are things that that countywide full-time coordinator could be working on. We also have a couple of more broad recommendations, the first of which is the county needs to think about who are we actually going to serve here? Who is the patient that will be coming through our door that we will admit and provide treatment and services to? So there's two groups. There's those who will not be covered, will not be treated by other providers in the county or anywhere else, and those who will have no ACA-based insurance coverage for the treatment that they need. The primary target population, we believe, should be those who have significant barriers and those who, because of the way the law is written, will sort of fall through the cracks and won't have insurance or Medicaid. So this is those who are transitioning out of some kind of incarceration or transitioning out of some kind of criminal justice setting, and those who are not lawfully present in the United States, and other low-income individuals who are uninsured for, you know, whatever reason comes up. They've just fallen through the cracks or they've chosen not to have insurance. The other broad recommendation is the county needs to think about what the service role is going to be. And we've done a little bit of research, a little bit of thought into the context for chapters 46 and 51 of the state statutes that were written 30, 40 years ago and don't necessarily make sense in a new Affordable Care Act world. There's also some experts, some academics who have argued that there's not going to be a role moving forward for standalone, publicly operated mental health and substance use disorder provider systems. We haven't taken that position, but that is a thought that's out there that's been written about quite a bit. And with all of these thoughts, the county needs to think about the types of services that BHD should provide. So we've broken into sort of two groups, insured persons with coverage and those who are uninsured and don't have coverage for mental health and substance use. So in that first group of those who are covered, there's choices that the county has to go through for this group. So there's the option of simply being an advocate, being a referral service. There's the option of being an insurance finance provider, similar to what BHD does today. BHD can be a fallback provider for those who don't get the treatment they need from other providers. Or BHD can cover uncovered services using state funds, federal funds, or using the property tax levy available to the county funds. There's also the option of doing a combination of these things as BHD does today. The second group is uninsured persons that don't have coverage in their insurance or through Medicaid or who are uninsured. And BHD should always try to attempt to get as much revenue from the paying sources behind this individual as they can. And to some extent, there will always be a need to, if the choice is made to serve this population, there will always be a need to pay for that service somehow, and that has to come from state funds, has to come from the property tax levy or wherever we can sort of squeeze funds to provide that service. So the final thought that we have is BHD has to think carefully about how it repositions, how it transitions with the Affordable Care Act, develop a clear and coherent plan for how to serve as an advisor and advocate for people in Milwaukee County who need the services that BHD currently provides, who BHD will serve in the future, what types and levels of services BHD will provide, how the cost of services will be covered, and what part of the non-insurance financing will fall on the county itself through county property tax or other funds. So we certainly wish you luck and are here as experts as you move forward, implement design and research and correct the plan as it moves forward, and we're certainly happy to answer any questions and provide any help and service that we can. My contact information is there, and David Reamer, our colleague, is also certainly available and willing to talk about this issue.
Okay. Questions from committee?
Question.
Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Informative presentation. The governor has already stated that he's rejecting ACA funds. Is that why the number is set for Wisconsin at 100% level?
Well, that's what he is. It's not a done deal. It's what he's proposed in his budget. In the governor's budget is not always what passes through the legislature, although in this environment that's certainly a likelihood. We've been advocating in the Capitol for moving that line up to 133 from 100 that the governor proposed. And our belief is that and the numbers from the State Legislative Fiscal Bureau are a movement of about 90,000 people off of Badger Care due to the governor's plan. And our plan, our alternative, would add people to Badger Care to a tune of 125,000 to 175,000. So that would largely be childless adults and adults who were not covered before for whatever reason. So our advocacy is aimed at getting as many people covered by Badger Care as possible, first, but a compromise that we think is a more legislatively viable, politically viable plan is to draw that line at 133, and that will still allow us to leverage those federal dollars you mentioned, get them into the state. In the first 3 years, that expansion of Badger Care would be entirely paid for by the federal government. And the governor's plan relies largely on the current 60-40 match, 60% federal dollars, 40% state dollars, and doesn't leverage that 100% from the feds. So it leaves us as taxpayers on the hook to pay. We're paying, of course, for other states to expand their Badger Care program while we use more state taxpayer dollars to pay for the governor's plan. So we've been there advocating for a change and would certainly encourage everybody else to do the same as well.
Definitely. The trend of political decisions has continued to plague Wisconsin. Hopefully we can change this. What does the salary actually look like at the 100% rate of federal poverty line in 133?
We're in the 2013 guidelines, an individual family of one is $11,400. When you move up to a family of two, it's something like $15,000. You get up to a family of four, $22,000. Moving that line up to 133 is, it goes from 11,400 up to 12,100, something like that. Those are just rough estimates. And we can get you the exact chart for the poverty guidelines. But we're talking about very poor people. This is a population that struggles to put food on the table, to pay rent.
Right.
And now the governor's plan will ask them to pay more for their insurance, up to, if they fall in a certain category, 100% to 200% of the poverty level, they're buying insurance in the private market, they'll be paying 2% of their income towards their premium. So that's someone at the poverty level about $20 a week. Well, that's $20 that can't go towards paying the rent, putting food on the table, sending a kid to school with clothes on her back. And the other part of that is, that individual could be required to pay up to $2,000 for out-of-pocket costs, so deductibles and copays, and if it's a family, up to $4,000. So it's sort of a disappointing outcome from a great tool that was given to the state that we've made this decision. The governor has made this decision, but like I said, it's not a done deal. The budget hasn't been passed, so there
are
some
opportunities. Very true, and. There's also nine other counties, including Milwaukee County, where representatives from those county boards have come together to advocate to receive those federal dollars. If, let's say, the scenario is that the governor and the state will not accept those funds, that we could accept those on the county level, the same way that Family Care accepts federal funds directly. Would you see that as a viable option to continue to provide services for our residents that need access to insurance?
Supervisor, I think it's worth researching and asking the questions about. We, David Reamer, my colleague, and I have questions about the legality of that. Our thought is that it would take a change to federal law made by Congress, and whether that would go through Congress is a real big question mark. But like I said, I think it's worth asking the questions but not putting eggs in that basket. I think it's probably more worthwhile to be in touch with our legislature specifically the Joint Finance Committee members at the state level to talk about improving the governor's plan.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Thank you.
Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you. And thank you for your presentation. But what you just stated had more meat than what your presentation had. And the reason why I said that, because if you didn't use the governor's 100th threshold, mm-hmm. and to make that presentation, it would have more gloom and doom to it. Second of all, when you came back and when you was on the tail end, if you go back to your other slides, you stated the bottom line, Milwaukee County, how are you going to solve this problem? But we want you to go out and go to providers and let them take care of all the insurance and all the other prepaid. But we want you to actually, for those who do not fall through the cracks, we know the other providers are not going to take care of them. So you have to figure out a plan. And one part of the whole presentation, when you say what are state funds you have, but you came to realize that Milwaukee taxpayers are going to have to pay for it. And that's the bottom line. With this new thing that the governor, and you didn't want to say the Republicans want to slam down the state of Wisconsin residents without looking for the safety or providing a safety net for them. But you got to look at it in another way of your presentation. Yes, we do need to collaborate. We need to make sure that we have all the players at the table. But you want us to advocate for these other, for the nonprofits and the other people who are going to be in insurance, what they're going to bring to the table. We can't be the only advocate at the table. And even though it should be an act of God or act of Congress, that we should from now on be able to, other counties, if they do a consortium, to get them federal dollars come directly to them. Because mm-hmm. the state of Wisconsin is just a pass-through, and they take their 10% administration costs. If you look also, when you talk about the people under 100%, it's not 2% of their salary. Insurance can go from 2% all the way to 20% of their income. And how will they be able to live? They will be extremely poor. So it's not about the have has nots. I would like to see more of numbers, of showing reality, so people can understand this faith, what this governor and the state legislation will say, well, we're going to bring it down from a 130, well, you want to go up to 132, down to 100, and so people can look at it across the state, because not only affecting Milwaukee County, it's affecting the whole state of Wisconsin. But I really appreciate you providing us this information.
Sure. And thank you, Supervisor. And if I could address some of your points, we've been in the Capitol advocating for changing the governor's plan. We've talked to many members of the legislature. We're part of the Save Badger Care Coalition. There are people out there working on this issue and trying to make it happen. It's also the position of the Hospital Association, the Medical Society, the primary health care physicians in the state, and 44 other providers, health systems, that the governor's plan should be improved and that line should be drawn at 133. So there is an effort out there to make that happen. But it's in the hands of the legislature now, and then ultimately has to pass through the governor's veto. On your point about who is the fallback provider for this population, I don't know that we're making a recommendation here. Our recommendation is that the county needs to think about that, needs to think that there will be people that will fall through the cracks. And it's unfortunate we don't want to put that on your table, of course, but you are a provider of these services already, and there are county property tax dollars, as Mr. Henkin presented to you last month, going into providing these services that aren't, it's a service and there's revenue that could be recouped now because of the Affordable Care Act from Medicaid, from private insurance. So there's opportunities to expand and to get more revenue from the sources that should be giving revenue towards providing these services.
And I agree, but let's make it very clear. We are the safety net in Milwaukee County. No one else, even though you got the other prescribed, the hospitals and all the other providers out there advocating to that 133, Milwaukee County was it. Before they realized there's opportunities. Now, they have opportunities to give back, and some of them get that line. But when they with that threshold, they come to Milwaukee County. So it's not about should we be in it. We are already playing it. We are already the role players. So I understand what you're trying to say, but I want to make the picture real clear that we are the ones who are doing this, and everybody else is jumping on board because there are opportunities for them to get in the game, but they want to get paid. Milwaukee County do not get paid. We try to give services, and then we have to pay the other vendors because we are the safety net. And I'm happy that the other individuals and all the providers out there wants to play a role to cut down on Milwaukee County. But anyone else in the state of Wisconsin, understand, out of the 72 counties, they know Milwaukee County take care of their people if they can.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ones that might fall through the crack, the uninsured, do you have a projected number or approximate number?
slide.
Back here, a slide. And this, again, was an estimate based on drawing the level at 133 for battery care. So that that drop of 92,000 people, there will probably be less people in that. So there, the 48,000 number will probably be a little higher, a few more people in Milwaukee County who remain uninsured. Mm-hmm. And that number is largely... The residual is largely people who are not here lawfully, the prison population, and the folks with a religious objection. Now, there will also be some who fall through the cracks just because of choice or circumstance and don't enroll in Badger Care and don't get a private insurance plan or aren't old enough for Medicare or whatever it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Bowen?
And to be clear on Supervisor Stamper's question, we're talking about an uninsured number because they are above the poverty line, correct? And they can afford their own insurance? Or go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, mm-hmm. Supervisor. This is a projection of all incomes. This is anybody. So that number, 48,000, we think will be higher because of the governor's proposal if that becomes law.
Right. So the higher that we would make the accessibility for Badger Care, right, and that federal poverty line, the less people we would have insured. So I think that just really speaks to just how expensive the cost of living is and being able to afford insurance on your own or be able to rely on publicly funded insurance. And if you can't pay for that, and we would, with these levels so low, my mom used to always say, you have to be very, very poor or in need and able to get any help, and usually that line is so low that the people in the middle end up bearing the burden because they need help too, but the programs can't service them.
And I will point out, Supervisor, which I think I mentioned, one benefit here that we can thank the Affordable Care Act for is the and the governor, frankly, moving the line for Badger Care to 100% for childless adults will certainly improve that number, will improve the revenues for BHD and increase the number of people coming through the door who have Badger Care. Our Badger Care Plus core program for childless adults is shrinking, capped, frozen, and there's 150,000 people on the waiting list. So there is a good thing for BHD and a good thing for the patients themselves that that program will be available to them.
Gotcha.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Mayo?
Madam Chair, this is a very interesting report. I'd like to make a motion to receive, place on file, but also let you know for the ones, how they talk about the people who are unemployed, that's off the rank, off the grid. What about those unemployed people off the grid? They don't have any insurance either. That's not accounted into your numbers at all.
I mean, that Supervisor, that's always an issue with any dates, any data. This starts with census data, and there's, of course, issues with people moving, not being counted, not responding to those surveys. But the noise in that data is generally small, but there are, of course, people that fall through the cracks that don't get counted that aren't included here.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Is there any other comments or questions from committee? Seeing none, we do have a motion to receive and place on file. Madam Clerk, on that motion, please call the roll.
Mayo.
Aye.
Bowen.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Taylor.
Excuse.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
4 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place this item on file is approved.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.